From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
The Dead Man's Hand. In the days when, as a young man, I had every intention of pursuing a career on the stage, I at one period found myself in Brixton, paying daily visits to various theatrical agencies in search of work. It was here that I ran across the manager of a fit-up company who wanted a man of about my age and build to play second lead in a melodrama. I closed with his offer, and for the next 4 weeks, which was as long as his funds held out, I paid 3-night visits to various towns in Wales, winding up at Yadundo, no better off financially than when I commenced, and having to pay my own fare back to London. If, however, my excursion into Wales was unprofitable from the monetary standpoint, it was by no means lacking in other respects, for apart from the experience I gained from playing 4 entirely different parts a night with 2 electric changes, I came across several interesting cases of hauntings, one of which is quite alone in its eerie aspects. One of my landladies, a kindly soul to whom I had chatted about my interest in ghosts, introduced me to an old man, Clem Morgan, whom, she had said, had a curious experience in one of the neighboring mines. The incident had taken place some 50 years ago, shortly after a dreadful explosion in which many scores of the miners had been killed and injured. Clem Morgan was not by any means a fanciful man, and it took more than a little persuasion on my part to get him to recount the experience, which he had kept mostly to himself for so long. But once firmly assured of my serious interest, he unburdened himself, becoming all the more stronger in his recollections as he proceeded. I will narrate the incident, merely tidying up the wording of it here and there, just as Mr. Morgan narrated it to me. 1,000 feet down, close to the site of that great tragedy which had moved the whole country to mourning, my mate and I were at work. Pick, 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 shovel, shovel, shovel. The sound of our tools must have been heard hundreds of yards away. George, I said, stopping work for a breather, was it like this before the accident? Like what? George grunted. He was a middle-aged man with a black, stubby beard and arms like the gnarled and knotted branches of an oak. Like what? Why, as lonely as this, were you working with just one other man, or were you with the rest of the gang? With one other, George said, and just as soft as you. Why can't you let it drop? I'm sick to death of hearing about it. It's a marvel to me how you escaped, I said. Whereabouts were you? Just where we are now, he said. And that's all I'll tell you, so you best shut up. You went up them steps with all the hell of the explosion ringing around you? I said, advancing to the edge of the black shaft, close to where we were working, and looking at the slender wooden ladder leading up to the dark vault above. It's a wonder to me you didn't miss your footing in the hurry and fall. I would have done. I've no doubt you would, he said. But I'm no tenderfoot. I was at this game when you were in your cradle, which you never ought to have left. How many feet down is it? I asked, peering below me, much fascinated. 14 fathoms. We don't reckon by feet here. Done with that way of things in the schoolroom. So that you'd be killed outright if you fell. Try it and see. It's my brother I was thinking of, not myself, I said. Where was he when the explosion took place? How can I say, boy? George said irritably. I don't know where half the folk are. They told me he was in an attic leading into the main shaft. He may have been, for all I know. Do you suppose it was here he was working? I said later, going again to the shaft and peering down. This isn't the only attic on the main, my companion replied. He wasn't here. Leastways, not when I was. I heard he was with a man he had intentionally injured, and whoever after bore him a grudge. Oh, said George, so you know as much as that, do you? And what in hell was this man like? I can't say, except that he was much older than Dick and very ugly. That description would fit in with dozens down here. If he was working with your brother, and your brother was killed, the odds are he was killed too. You really think so? Seems reasonable enough, don't it? He might have escaped, like you did. He might, George laughed. Just in the same way as pigs might fly. Supposing you get on with your work and let me do the same. I had a queer dream about that man, I said. Dreams? Who believes in dreams, George said. What was it? I dreamed he had something to do with Dick's death and with the accident. Then you'd better tell the inspector, said George, and maybe he'll alter his verdict. You seem to have been very fond of this brother of yours. You've done nothing but carp about him all morning. I was fond of him, I said. So we all are. He kept the home going for the last 6 years. Kept the home going. Why, where was you? At college, studying for a teacher. I gave it up after his death. A schoolmaster? Well, I'm blowed. Then you didn't see much of Dick? Only in the holidays. And who told you about this fellow who's supposed to have a spite against him? Mother? Oh, your mother. Only hearsay after all. Well, they're both dead anyhow. Good and bad, bad and good. All went together, boy. What do they call you? Clem. Well, Clem, get on with your shoveling for mercy's sake. I've had enough of talking to last me to the end of the week. I then took up my spade, Clem Morgan continued, and for the next hour there was no other sounds but the steady pick, 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 and scrape, scrape, scrape. Every now and then George sprang aside. There was a crash, and a huge block of coal fell on the rocky floor, amid a blinding shower of dust. A fraction of a second later, and he would have been under it, his head a jelly. Yet the narrowness of his escape did not seem to affect him. He treated it with the utmost indifference, and wiping away the smuts from his eyes, took up his pick and resumed his hitting. I regarded him in silent wonder. When the dinner break arrived, I groped my way to see one of the big galleries, for the idea of eating alone with George did not appeal to me. When I'd finished my meal, I set out on my way back. A terrible sense of isolation hung over that part of the mine where I bent my steps. It was so far away from the other adits, so deep down, so dark and silent. Up above in the fields, woods and valleys, one is never quite alone, for the voice of nature makes itself heard in the birds and insects. You know you're in the midst of life. But here in the bowels of the earth, encased in the dead vegetation of a long ago forgotten world, there is absolute stillness. As I pressed on, the crunching of my feet on the scattered fragments of coal awoke the echoes of the galleries, and I stopped every now and then to listen in awe to the long reverberating echoes as they rolled round and round me. Once I nearly slipped, another foot and I would have plunged into a labyrinth, the cold draught from which wound itself round me and choked the air in my lungs. I drew back in horror, and clinging to the knobbly surface of the black wall by my side, pressed frantically forward. God, supposing I should ever lose my way down here, be left behind when all the men went home, what would become of me? The sweat rose on my forehead at the bare idea of it. Presently, to my relief, I heard the sound of picking, and an abrupt turn of the passage brought me in sight of George, who had already restarted work. I hurried to his side. and picking up my shovel began to make a neat stack of the rapidly accumulating chunks, ready for carting. "George," I said after a while, "why didn't you tell me it was you who was working along with Dick?" "So, you've been asking questions, have you?" he said, still carrying on working. "Who told you?" "Jim and Harry Peters." "Well, what of it?" "Why didn't you say so when I asked you?" "What odds if I had? It wouldn't have done you any good." "Did you have a quarrel with him?" "They did tell you I had. Because if so, it's no use my saying anything." "But what do you say?" "No, Dick and me never had no quarrel." "Is that true?" "Gospel." After this, we worked on in silence. Then I suddenly cried out and pointed at his cap. It was lying on the ground, some few feet from where we were working, close beneath a projecting block of coal, and it was moving as if being violently agitated by something inside it. "What is it?" I said. "What is what?" said George, resting for a moment on the handle of his pick. "Why, that," I said, pointing to his cap. "What makes it move like that?" "The wind, of course. There's not enough drop for that. See," I placed a piece of paper on the ground within an inch or two of the cap, and it remained perfectly still. "Something must be underneath it," I said, and picked up the cap. But there was nothing there. "What do you think of it now?" I asked. George did not answer. He turned round so that I could not see his face and plied his pick vigorously. After a few minutes, I stopped work again. "George," I cried, "what's the matter with your coat? Look, it's doing just what your cap did." At this, George threw down his pick with an oath. "What do you want to keep worrying me for?" he said. "What's wrong now?" "Why, your coat. It's moving, rising up and down as if the wind were blowing it, and there's not an atom of draught." "It's your fancy," he said hoarsely. "The coat's not moving." "What?" I said. "Do you mean you can't see it moving?" "No," he replied. "It's not moving, I tell you." And picking up his tool, he set to work again, even harder than before. Some minutes later, I again stopped. "My lamp," I exclaimed, "it's burning blue. What makes it do that?" George paused, his pick shoulder high, and looked around. "Nonsense," he said savagely. "You are a..." And then he left off, and his jaw dropped. "It must be some chemical in it," he said. "Let the damn thing be. It'll soon right itself." "This is a strange place," I said. "First of all, your cap, then your coat, and now the lantern, all doing something queer. Have you ever known the likes of it before?" "Often," he muttered. "Scores of times. Funny things is always happening below ground. You'll get used to them in time." "And yet, you look a bit scared." "Do I? Well, I'm not. By the saints, I'm not." And raising his pick, he attacked the coal furiously. The afternoon was waning. It is a peculiarity of the mind that however deep down they may be, they yet feel the influence of time, and the departure of the sunlight from above seems to create an immediate increase in the gloom below. On this afternoon, I felt the change acutely as the darkness stole down the pit's mouth and permeated adits, shafts, galleries, everywhere. My light was still burning blue, but beyond it, down in the great gaping chasm, not 10 feet from George, and away along the narrow winding passage separating me from the rest of the gang, all was dense black. I was staring around, too interested to go on with my work, when something icy cold gripped my fingers, and looking down, I saw a big white hand lying on the top of mine. I gave a yell and dropped my shovel, at which the hand vanished. "What's the matter now, curse you?" George said angrily. "If you keep on hindering me like this, I'll tell the overseer. See if I don't." "The place is haunted," I gasped. "A hand caught hold of mine just now." "A hand?" he cursed loudly. "What next?" And then started to laugh. "I'm sure it was a hand," I said, "and it had a ring on, like my brother's." "You've got your damned brother on the brain. In a few days you'll get over it and laugh at your fright. There's no hands here but yours and mine, lad. Aren't there, I said? Then what's that just below yours on the pick? George looked down. Instead of two hands, his own two hands on the pick, there were three, and the third was white and luminous. With a shriek, he dropped the pick and sprang away from it as if it had been a serpent. Do you believe me now? I said, frightened to hell as I was. If that wasn't Dick's hand, I've never seen it. I could swear to his ring among a thousand. And look, have you seen how dark it's been getting? I've seen nothing, George said roughly. He raised his pick and began work again, but his hands shook so much he struck his leg and dropped the pick with a cry of pain. It's nothing, he said as I scrambled to his side. Only a skin graze, but I reckon I'll sit down a bit. I'm all of a tremble. He had moved nearer to the edge of the pit and was about to sit down with his back towards it when I cried out, My God, there's Dick! He's just behind you. He's pointing at you, George. I see it all now. George, you devil, you murdered him. George looked round and saw as I did, bending over him, a tall figure with a strangely white face. He threw out his hands to keep the figure off, and as he did so, he slipped and fell with one loud yell of terror into the pit. I heard him strike the side of the great abyss once, then thud, that was all. Sick in my mouth, I reeled back to the safety of the niche where we had been working, and as I did so, my eyes fell on the lamp. The flame was now white and normal. A rescue party that went in search of George found him in a dying condition at the bottom of the shaft. The fact that he was not killed outright was due to his having fallen in a foot or two of mud and water, which had broken his fall. He lingered just long enough to confess that he, and he only, was to blame for the recent disaster. He said he'd had a violent quarrel with my brother, whom he had hated, and when Dick's back was turned, he struck him over the head with his pick and killed him. Seized with horror, he then dragged Dick's body into the passage, and in order to minimize the risk of discovery, has saturated it with paraffin and set fire to it. He had just enough time to reach the ladder leading up from the shaft and climb up it before the explosion took place. The Welsh miners are at times magnanimous, and on this occasion they agreed to keep George's crime a secret. To give publicity to the affair, they argued, would not give them back the relatives they had lost, and would only do harm to the dead man's widow and family, who were left almost penniless. Thus the matter ended, and to the outside world the cause of the explosion remained as before a mystery. Of course, it may be said of this case that it has no great value from the evidential point of view, no one having witnessed the ghostly happening but Morgan and the man who was subsequently killed. This may be. At the same time, much depends upon the character of a witness and the evidence of one man, who is reliable is surely worth more than the evidence of several men who are not reliable. Clem Morgan told his story in a simple, straightforward manner, and I believed him.